We're reading today from Srimad Bhagavat Puran, Canto 9, Chapter 4. This is verse 40. The chapter is entitled Ambrish Maharaj Offended by Dhruvasa Muni. Ambasha Kavalenata Karishivrata Paramam Ahura Bhakshanam Vipra Yasitam Nasitam Tata Brahmana Atitkrame. In passing the rules of respect to the Brahmins, Doshaha, there is fault. Dvadasham, on the Dvadasi day. Yat, because. Aparane, in not breaking the fast, in due time. Yat kritva, after doing which action? Sadhu, what is auspicious, may, unto me. Buyat, may so become. Adharmaha, what is irreligious. Va, either. Na, not. Mam, unto me. Sprisyat, may touch. Ambasha, by water. Kavalena, only. Ata, therefore. Harishye, I shall execute. Vrata paramam, the completion of the vow. Ahu said. Apabhakshanam, drinking water. Vipraha, O Brahmins. He, indeed. Asitam, eating. Na asitam cha, as well as not eating. Tat, such an action. The translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, who very mercifully brought the wisdom and the devotion of the Bhagavat Puran to the Western countries so that we fallen people could cultivate a taste for Bhakti Yoga, the love, the yoga of love and gratitude, with an end to worshipping the Supreme Lord Krishna out of pure, unmotivated love. Srila Prabhupada ki? Yeah. Translation. The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior towards the Brahmins is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dvadasi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O Brahmins, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the Brahmins, the king reached this decision. For, according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. Purport. When Maharaj Ambrish, in his dilemma, consulted the Brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Dvadasi Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish himself decided, in the presence of the Brahmanas, that he would drink a little water, for this would confirm that the fast was broken, but would not transgress the laws for receiving a Brahman. In the Vedas, it is said, Apyosdati tan navaisitam navai asitam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes, in our practical experience, we see that some political leader adhering to satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Ambarish decided to act in this way. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskacha Desatarni Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudiriyat Nastra Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki. Each section of the Srimad Bhagavat Puran, as translated and commented upon by the Vaishnava Acharyas, give us the opportunity to kindle pure love of God. This is the entire purpose of the Srimad Bhagavat Puran. And this is the intention of the author, Vyasadev, in compiling narratives about the Supreme Lord's pastimes and also the life and activities of the pure devotees of the Lord. So in this particular section, there is a very famous activity, an attitude of Ambarish Maharaj. Each section, each instruction in the Bhagavad Puran is to cultivate an attitude of loving devotion. The sections themselves, and indeed the purports to the verses, make this very clear to us and inspire us in a very devotional manner, and we can get the first clue to what is the mood and the deeper import of the verse by the actual Sanskrit words themselves and the English translation for our benefit. Brahmana, atikrame, the first word, means in surpassing the rules of respect to the Brahmanas. Aparane means in not breaking the fast in due time. Vrata paramam means by completion of the vow, and back sanam means drinking water. So, what we have from these key words in the verse, we have by maintaining respect for elevated persons, but completing a vow of fasting and breaking fast by drinking water. This is the essence of this verse. The scenario has two characters. Durvasa Muni, who is a mystic, who is a Brahmin, who meditates on the impersonal aspect of Brahman, and King Ambarish, who we would think may not be so much of a transcendentalist. He may be more of a worldly person because he is a king, he's surrounded by wealth, he's surrounded by beautiful objects, he has power. People are in fear of him because of his armies, because of his position. And he is a bhakta of Lord Krishna. So we can compare and we can contrast these two personalities. And this is the intention of this verse. Durvasa Muni was a sage, but he had a temper. He had a hot temper. He angered easily. And he often put himself in positions where he would very much test the mettle, test the endurance of various people to see if they passed what he construed as the laws of Dharma and how he should be treated because of his elevated position. And he often tried people just to see, and he was given to become angry if they did not act in the manner in which he thought they should conduct themselves. In the Brahmanda Puran, there is a situation in which there is a quarrel between Brahma and Shiva. Shiva's one name is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means, quite simply, he who can be very easily angered or very easily appeased. So Shiva, he would become angry at times with certain situations, particularly if his time was being wasted, because the greater part of his time was wrapped in meditation about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So, with this quarrel between him and Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Ashutosh, he became filled with rage. Parvati, his wife, she was frightened. She said to him, "Durvasam bhavati me." She said, "It has become impossible for me to happily live with you." In the purport to yesterday's verse, and the speaker spoke at some length on this point, of how the wife should be submissive to the husband. But here we have a situation where the husband was not behaving. So it's not always the wife's fault, ladies, and you must encourage your husbands to act in a respectable manner. She said, "Durvasam bhavati me. I can't live with you if you're just going to behave like this." Another lady, Anasuya, she had previously received the boon that she could have Shiva's child, that a portion of Shiva's greatness would be transferred to her womb and she would have a qualified son. So Shiva, in keeping with this boon, he transferred his rage, and Durvasa was born an angry young chap. In the Mahabharata, Anusuyam Parvat, chapter 160, it describes how Durvasya caused difficulty to Krishna and Rukmini there in Dwarka. In the Mahabharata and the Vani Parva, chapter 263, Duryodhana convinced Durvasa to trouble the Pandavas, but Krishna intervened and saved the day. In the Valmiki Ramayana, the Balakanda, section 61, Indra stole a cow from Ambrish, from his Yogashala, where he was conducting a sacrifice. For Devendra, Lord Indra, was envious of Maharaj's, Ambrish's, his power and his fame. So, in this particular pastime, in the Mahabharata, it's mentioned, an additional piece of information is given, that Indra instigated Durvasa to act against Ambrish. For again, Indra was envious of his power that he would receive upon completion of 24 Nirjal Ekadasis that he had started and was about to finish again in the month of Kartik. So, in conclusion, Durvasa Muni, like Narad Muni at times, could be classified as an ajan provocateur. He was a mixer, deliberately causing trouble. Now, in contrast, we have Ambrish Maharaj. There are 9 processes of devotion described in the Padma Purana. Shravanam is speaking, and Parikshit Maharaj excelled in this, in speaking Bhagavat Purana. Kirtanam, remembering, this was Sukadev's forte. Smaranam, remembering, Prahlad Maharaj, he was very, very good. He was famous for this. Padasevanam, serving the lotus feet, Lakshmi Devi herself, constantly served the Lord's lotus feet. Archanam, puja, Prithu Maharaj was famous. Vandanam, offering prayers, Akura. He gets famous for this activity. Satyam, friendship with Sadama Brahman. And Atmanivedanam, as we discussed recently, this was Bali Maharaj. Now, Ambrish Maharaj, he was famous for all of these qualities, all 9 of the processes. He was such an amazing devotee. It is said a few verses earlier, Maharaj Parikshit always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna, his words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples, and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees in service. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of the tulsi offered to Krishna. And engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad remnants. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temple of the Lord, and his head in bowing down before the Lord, and all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. So he is an amazing devotee by any standards. He was a king. He was a very, very wealthy king. He was the emperor of the whole world with all of what the world contained. It says in verse 27, Maharaj Ambrish gave up all attachment to household affairs, wives, children, friends, and relatives. To the best of powerful elements elephants to beautiful chariots, carts, horses, inexhaustible jewels, to ornaments, garments, and into an inexhaustible treasury. He gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary and material. This is a very interesting word, inexhaustible. It means no matter what you do, pretty much it's still going to be there. We can say the ocean is inexhaustible. No matter how much water you scoop out of the ocean, it's practically speaking not going to make very much difference. It's like the Ganga is inexhaustible. It's been flowing for millions of years and will continue to flow. Inexhaustible. His jewels and his treasury, his wealth, was inexhaustible. It mentions carts, horses, equipment. If we think of this in modern terms, it's how many vehicles, how many airplanes, how many helicopters, how many yachts he has. Very successful people, people who reach the billionaire status, there's about 200 of them on this planet today, invariably they have a yacht to show their wealth. When they meet for a film festival in the south of France, they don't go to a hotel, they just pull in their yacht into the harbor. So all of the sheikhs, all of the movie stars, all of the big industrialists, they have a yacht. So this is the modern equivalent. In Bombay today, there is one very wealthy gentleman called Mukesh Ambani. Very, very wealthy. And he built himself a house for his family, which was 60 stories tall, 60 floors. However, in his building, it only has 27 floors. Because each floor is double height, double the normal height. So we say it had a vaulted ceiling or it had a cathedral ceiling. His car park is for 168 cars. He has a theater with 50 seats if he wants to watch a video with his friends. It has 400,000 square foot. That's the equivalent in India of 600 cricket pitches. To the Western-minded person, it's the area, his house, is the area of 5 professional soccer pitches. It was in 2014, it was valued at £2 billion. 2 billion is 335 crores of dollars, or 23,000 crores of rupees. And that's his house. That's not his entire wealth. That's what he paid so he can sleep comfortably at night. That's one man, a billionaire, out of 200 billionaires who are the wealth of this planet. Maharaj Ambarish was the king of everything. He was the most wealthy person. His jewels and his coffers of the treasury were inexhaustible. But he considered everything in the universe to have the value of a piece of stone. As we walk around Vrindavan, as we see construction sites, as we walk along the road, we see so many pieces of broken stone which are just left there. They have no value. Nobody even wants to use them. Just a piece of broken stone. This person who had many, many more times what Mr. Ambani has, considered everything to be the value of one of these worthless pieces of stone. Durvasa Muni, in text 37, yes, getting to that. Durvasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Ambarish. But to perform the regulative ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Jamuna, because all of this happened in Mahavan, this whole pastime. There he dipped into the water of the auspicious Jamuna and meditated on the impersonal Brahman. So he is a Brahman, he's a Mayavadi, he's a mystic, and his aspiration is impersonal Brahman. Maharaj Ambarish, on the other hand, he was a devotee. His mood was, those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievement of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. So one of these personalities, Dhruvasa, was an accomplished mystic. He was a Mayavadi. And the other, Ambarish Maharaj, was a great devotee. And although he had so much power, although he had so much wealth, in his heart, because he had so much attachment in pure love of Krishna, he considered that nothing material was worthwhile. Lord Chaitanya, he instructed Sanatana Goswami, and it's recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 22, verse 121. He talks about the regulative principles of devotional service. He said, these are, from these you attain the highest perfection, and you obtain the most desirable treasure. This is how Lord Chaitanya describes as applying ourselves to 64 devotional principles. He gives 10 items of due, and the 9th item is observing Ekadasi. He gives 10 items of don't. Number 9 is observing Ekadasi. Number 10 is worshipping the cows, the Brahmins, and the Vaishnavas. The first of the 10 don'ts is to avoid offenses to the process of bhakti and to the holy names of the Lord. Then he goes on to give the rest of these another 44 processes. In the next section, next list is the 9 processes of bhakti, and number 10 is my favorite application of bhakti in all of the instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave, which is dancing before the deity. And that is my favorite pastime, to dance before the deity. When I was a brahmachari here in the beginning days, at one time I was the pujari in Delhi, in Todarmal Lane, and I wanted to learn Bharatanatyam dancing. I went to the Kalakendra, I said, I want to become a student, I want to dance, I want to express myself gracefully before the Lord. And they said, yes, you can come, no problem. You have to come and live here for 6 weeks. I said, oh, I can't. I'm the pujari, I can come in the morning, I have a few hours. They say, no, you must. I said, sorry. Although I aspired to be much more graceful in my dancing, I still love to dance before the Lord. The 9th item in all of the 64 was observing Ekadasi. Ekadasi observing, as is explained in Haribhakti Vilas, means Nirjal Ekadasi. It means not eating and not drinking. Not eating and not drinking is observing Ekadasi. Now it's possible to conduct oneself on Ekadasi in a manner in which one doesn't break Ekadasi, but one doesn't actually observe Ekadasi. And that is what Srila Prabhupada gave us. Don't eat grains, don't eat beans. And to some people's mind it becomes more, you can't eat jeera, you can't eat tomato, you can't. But by following this, you can avoid breaking Ekadasi. But you're not actually observing Ekadasi. Observing Ekadasi means nirjal Ekadasi, and this is what Ambrish Maharaj had done. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:26-30 in Paranjana, in the purport, Prabhupada says, according to the Vaishnav calendar, there's many fasts, Ekadasis and the appearance day of the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 9:4-68, Prabhupada says, Durvasa unnecessarily wanted to chastise Ambrish on flimsy grounds. Ambrish wanted to complete Ekadasi observance of part of devotional service to please the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-24, Vishnath Chakravarti says, devotional service to Krishna is obtained by strictly observing vows like Ekadasi. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 11:12-12, in the purport, it says the injunction to fast on Ekadasi is a permanent vow for all Vaishnavas. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 10:17, the content of the Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatan Goswami is detailed. In this Vaishnav Smriti Granta, there's 20 chapters or vilasas. The fifth is worshipping Shalagram. The ninth is how to pick tulsi leaves and how to appropriately offer them to the Lord. And the 12th of the 20 is how to observe a full fast on Ekadasi without food or water. There are 24 Ekadasis in the year. Some years there's 26. If there's an extra month put on, the month of Purushottam. And Sutta Goswami describes the glories of specific benefits of each of the particular Ekadasis. And he has been recorded in various Puranas describing various of the Ekadasis. The Nirjal Ekadasi of June and July is probably the most difficult because it's in the heat of summer. So many people who may not fully observe Ekadasis on some of the other months, many people in India, they observe this Ekadasi because it's a Nirjal Ekadasi, and there's said to be particular benefits from observing this. The issue of contention in this verse between Durvasa Muni and Ambrish Maharaj is this breaking of Ekadasi. Ekadasi is a lunar tithi. We are familiar with a solar day from sunrise to sunrise, but a tithi is a little bit more difficult to explain and much more difficult to calculate, because the revolution of the moon around the earth takes 29.5 days. And if you divide this into an even 30 days, then the revolution of 360 days, the tithi takes place over 12 degrees. So when the moon moves through an angle of 12 degrees, this is a tithi. So, the Vaishnav calendar is actually a lunisolar calendar because we do observe solar days and also lunar days. But the lunar day is only, the lunar year, 12 months, is only 354 days, where the solar year, as we know, is usually 365 days. So there's 11 days short, and they make up for this every 32 and a half months by putting in an extra month, a Purushottam month. There's no observances, there's no festivals in these months. It's simply an extra month to align the solar with the lunar. And we can get all of these details in the Vaishnav Panjaga. A tithi, because the moon doesn't revolve in a perfect circle, but rather it's an oval shape, it's elongated, on account of this, on account of other factors which are gravitational pulls, it's a more difficult thing to calculate. It is calculated, but many factors have to be taken into consideration. So a lunar tithi can be 21 and a half hours, or it can be up to 26 hours. So it's complicated to calculate because of the angles involved. For example, the last Ekadasi on the 8th was from 22:46 at night to 10:35 on the second day. So the 9th was Ekadasi. So not only Ekadasi, but all the festivals are according to tithis. Janmashtami, the Shringas, Appearance Day, and also the Christian calendar, which was originally a lunar calendar. They still calculate when is Easter Sunday according to the lunar tithis, lunar calendar. And the Muslims, who still observe according to their holidays, according to the lunar calendar, this is how they calculate the beginning of Ramadan. But practically speaking, we observe the Ekadasi tithi, although it may start at an odd time and finish at an odd time, there's some considerations as to when the tithi will be. So we observe the tithi from sunrise to sunrise. And that's when Ekadasi is. It starts at sunrise to sunrise the next day. So given that we observe from sunrise to sunrise, in spite of all of the complications and the difficult in calculations, breakfast is easy to calculate. Quite simply, one takes the time, the hours and minutes of sunrise, the hours and minutes of sunset, and calculates in between. You get so many hours and so many minutes. If you divide this by 3, you get 1/3 of the daytime in hours and minutes. You add this to the hours and minutes of sunrise, and you get, for example, on the last Ekadasi, sunrise was 6:03, sunset was 6:11, that's 12 hours and 8 minutes, 1/3 of that is 4 hours and 3 minutes. If we add that to the sunrise, we are advised to break our fast between 6:03 and 10:06. And it's a very simple matter. So, because of this, it wasn't difficult for Ambrish to know when he should break the fast. He had observed fasts for 24 fasts at least, possibly 26 if there was an extra month. He had observed those fasts, and each Dwadasi he had broken the fast. Now this was finalizing the complete 24, a whole year of fasts. But he knew when he should break the fast. But then Durvasa Muni, and so they became the thing of, technically, if you take water, are you breaking, are you not breaking? So he did like this so that he could break the fast timely. Of course, Durvasa Muni got upset. He became angry, and we will find out how his anger prevailed and what was the solution to this in terms of Ambrish Maharaj being Lord Krishna's devotee. When Srila Prabhupada went to the Western countries, when he went to New York, right now in New York, ISKCON has gained possession of their building. They're building it up again, starting things practically from scratch. And it reminds me of the difficulties Srila Prabhupada had when he started the ISKCON movement by himself as an old man. One of the scholars, one of the contemporary scholars in Hopkins, John Hopkins University, he said that the only thing you can really compare ISKCON to is either Christianity or Islam, the way it just rapidly spread throughout the whole world. He said, but ISKCON, and he said, but Christianity was started by Jesus Christ amongst his own people. He was Jewish. He lived in a Jewish community. He convinced the other Jews of his application, which a few centuries later became called Christianity, particularly after the Council of Nicaea in the 3rd century. Or Muhammad, he convinced his own people to take to his new system that was surrender to God, Islam. But Srila Prabhupada went on his own to a hostile environment and started Krishna consciousness. He taught his young disciples every single aspect. When we read these qualities of Ambarish Maharaj, by seeing the deity, by bowing down before the deity, by tasting prasad, and so on, Srila Prabhupada single-handedly taught his young aspiring disciples how to do every single activity. And it wasn't cultural. This was simply so they could more easily print his books and distribute his books and convince others of the necessity and of the advantages of Krishna consciousness. So we can see that the system of worship, the system of puja, the system of observing Ekadasi was all very basic. And in the meantime, for example, when Srila Prabhupada came here, he told Jamuna Devi to get deities, her and her husband Gurudas, to start building this temple. And he told her that she should get all of the information for deity worship from the Radharaman temple. So here in Vrindavan now, we have a very, very high standard of deity worship. And there are many high standards of so many different things. All of the basic things that Srila Prabhupada taught have been built upon. And now there's a very, very high standard of so many different aspects of Krishna consciousness, particularly the 64 arts. But basic to everything was the chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And today is the beginning of the week-long Holy Name Day. In 1996, the 100th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's appearance, it was decided that there should be a Holy Name Day and that everybody should increase their hearing and chanting of the Holy Name. So this was made a worldwide occasion. Then the GBC, they decided in 2008, they increased this to a week-long Holy Name Day. So here in ISKCON Vrindavan, as well as all of the ISKCON centers around the world, and as well as in the homes of all of the different ISKCON congregation members, they are undertaking an increase in the chanting of the Holy Names. The Holy Names is described by Lord Brahma to Narad Muni in the Kali Santun Upanishad. The chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is considered to be, is advised that this is the most efficient way to purify our hearts so that we can transcend this default position that we have as embodied souls within this material world, that we have the tendency to try to lord it over. We have the tendency to try to take ownership. We have the tendency to lord it over. This is our default position. You see it every day. You see the big monkey comes and he scares the others and he takes the food. People are especially fond of giving the young baby calves, the young bulls, food, and the mom comes along and moves them out of the way and she eats the food. So this whole circumstance of each entity considering himself to be the center of the universe and his gratification, his needs, his satisfaction is the most important thing. This can be militated against by the chanting of the holy names. So in this holy name week, we're going to have a small pandal at the front. There'll be kirtan performed in the pandal, particularly in the evening. So everyone is requested to adjust their services to some degree to personally and collectively, congregationally, to take part in the chanting of the holy names. Each section of the Bhagavatam is a lesson, it's instruction, it's prasad, it's mercy, so that we're reading this chapter, the next chapter about Amrish Maharaj, and we can aspire to follow in his footsteps, to take much more seriously the process of Krishna consciousness. And if we can arrive at the situation where we consider a piece of stone in the pathways all around Braj, if we consider any material advantage to be as invaluable as that piece of stone, then we will relish much more fully the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And by purifying our hearts, by becoming attached to the Lord's service, described in the beginning of the Bhagavatam as ahaitiki, apritiyata, to have unmotivated and uninterrupted service. By having this attitude, by having the purified heart to enunciate and to meditate deeply, one can make advancement. I saw a godbrother of mine for whom I have very much respect because he's a very sincere devotee, he's very hardworking, he's very humble. He epitomizes, if you do charitable activities, leave your camera at home. Very humble, very unassuming. I saw him, I said, Prabhuji, how are you doing? He said, if one day I can chant one of the beads of my mala without any of the 10 offenses, he said, at that point I will consider myself to to starting to make some spiritual advancement. He said, how am I doing? He said, terrible, just like before. So with this attitude of humility, not this attitude of lording it over, not this attitude of possessing to get power, to get reputation. So it's no surprise that the richest disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who was an inheritor of the portion of the Ford Motor Car Company, there's various trust funds for the various family members. So he came and he surrendered to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada called him Ambrish Maharaj. And one devotee, he was given the task of building the city in Mayapur. And he told me he started to think about it. I mean, look at Vrindavan and look at the problems there is and how to ensure that those problems don't happen for parking vehicles, for sewage, for suitable drinking water, for just for the amenities of what to speak of the building and the administration. And he was thinking, this is a huge task, when he started to think about it. And he said, how do you begin this? How does one begin to build a city? The resources and the planning and the time and the skills and the expertise. And he was just really, he said, walking around in a daze, how would he begin this? And he was in North America, and Ambrish Prabhu heard that he had come. He said, what's, are we starting the temple, the Mayapur city, the temple? And he said, yes. He said, oh, that's good. He said, because Prabhupada told me that I should put aside money for this. And the devotee said, really? He said, yeah. He said, I've been waiting all these years. He said, I have $40 million that I've put. And he went, wow. So not only had Prabhupada preached to this devotee, $40 million is a lot of money. It's a huge amount of money. You're seriously wealthy if you have $40 million. What to speak of $40 million to give away? That's not all his money, that's a portion of his money. And he had that, so Prabhupada saw in him this person who came and surrendered to Prabhupada and requested initiation. Prabhupada called him Ambrish Maharaj because he saw in him this quality of regarding everything he owned as the property of the Lord to be used in the service of the Lord. So if we can take a lesson from Ambrish Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, from the other great devotees who are serving Srila Prabhupada so nicely without bringing their camera along and posting their activities on YouTube or their blog, if we can seek out these devotees, then follow in their footsteps, take advantage of the festivals of the Acharyas, appearances and disappearance, the festivals of the appearance of the Lord, the special festivals that ISKCON construes, like the Holy Name Week, then we too can guarantee our destination in our next life. I've said this before, I'll say it many times again. I've seen four different letters that Srila Prabhupada wrote to his disciples. He said, if you follow the regulative principles, if you chant 16 hours a day, you will see Krishna face to face. He said, this is guaranteed. So when Srila Prabhupada came to the Western countries to give us the process of bhakti, it comes with a guarantee that we can go back to the spiritual world, dance for Krishna, perform so many activities, as the servant of the servant for Krishna's pastimes. If we come to this consciousness that the holy name is everything, and we may need some things for our maintenance, but to get attached and to try to accumulate is the greatest misunderstanding. Hare Krishna.